Para-X Radio, your source for everything paranormal and beyond.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and its guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X Radio Network, its affiliates, its sponsors, or Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Paranormal Encounters podcast series is educational, entertaining, and intriguing. Be careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Good evening, everyone, and thanks again for joining me for another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. In just a few moments, we're going to meet our guest this evening, Ms. Jen Cruz from The She Squatchers. And this doubleheader show, as in part one and extended to part two, will surely get you thinking. So before we get into our biography of her, I would like you to just sit back for a moment, relax, and get ready for a really great interview. Be back in a moment. Welcome back, everyone. Well, did I just intrigue you a bit regarding what this interview is going to be all about? Well, maybe just a little bit of it, but something tells me you're going to have to wait for part two if you want to hear all about Bigfoot. There are very few people that I have met in my life that have risen to the level of this guest. And when I mean the level, I mean in psychic ability, in remote viewing, and also what she is becoming very well known for, a leader of the group called She Squatchers, which is an all-female Bigfoot team that goes out looking for Bigfoot. Ms. Jen Cruz is the host of the radio show The Journey, heard every Wednesday evenings on the ParaX Radio Network. Jen Cruz came together with this group in 2015 and became the all-female Bigfoot experiment of all times as the Midwest's first all-female Bigfoot research team. Jen Cruz founded the team after receiving a suggestion from a cryptozoologist, Lauren Coleman, who had shared his idea that the recipe to success for interacting with Bigfoot would be to send women into the woods without men, dogs, or guns. Let's read on some more here. She Squatchers, which is their known group, isn't just women in the woods, as she would say. They are psychic women utilizing their extra senses while looking for Bigfoot. Team leader, yes, Jen Cruz, is not only a Bigfoot researcher, but she has done cases in missing persons using her psychic mediumship abilities and has absolutely exceptional remote viewing skills. Her teammates Jenna Grover and Tammy Trutchell are also gifted intuitives as well as adventurous woodsmen women. Okay, so together they have some amazing and some scary experiences collecting evidence along the way for many, many years. The team is based primarily out of Minnesota, but they have literally been traveling from coast to coast sharing the findings of what they have found while out in the woods with Bigfoot. Before we get into this interview, let me give you some details. And if you want to write this down, please do. If you want to learn more about the She Squatchers group in and of itself, you would go to their website at She Squatchers, that's all one word, .com. You could go to their Facebook page on facebook.com/She Squatchers Official. That's all one word. Or you could go to the YouTube channel, which has many, many episodes of their program. and you can hear all about some of their experiences, as well as listen to some of their guests that they have on their radio show. So, without further ado, that's just a little bit of a mini beginning for Jen Cruz. Let's sit back, grab ourselves some popcorn, and here we go with part one of part two with Ms. Jen Cruz of the She Squatchers. Well, hello, Jen, and thank you so much for being on this show tonight. I am absolutely very, very, very excited to talk to you. And so how is it all going on your end?
Very good. Thank you, Mark, for having me here tonight.
I thought we would get right into it because we've got a lot of material to cover. And I want people to really, really hear about some of your experiences. And so why don't we just kind of start with this basic foundation that I always like to do with my guests. And I would like you to kind of go back in time a little bit here for me and fill us in on when you first realized you started having some mediumship abilities, and tell us a little bit about all of that.
Well, it's funny, Kelly. I've always known that I was different ever since I was a little kid. And it's something that I noticed right away when my mom would react to something that I said or did with fear and apprehension. And so I just learned very quickly that it's not okay to talk about that. So I learned very quickly what not to say in order to be normal. Because I didn't like the feeling that it gave when I would say things like, Aunt Gladys just died, and it would just fly out of my mouth. And it was true. She had just died. And we found out later that that's when she died. So things like that scared my mom when it happened, so I learned very quickly kind of what to hold in if I could.
Jen, at what age was that about?
When it first started happening, I think I was like 3 or 4.
3 or 4. Did you have any of this in your family? I'm trying to get generational. Was your mother psychic? Was your father psychic?
Not that I was aware of from my mother or my father, but I did find out along this journey that my great-grandfather was gifted. And I am part Native American. I'm actually a tribal member, an enrolled tribal member of the Red Lake Band of Chippewa Indians in northern Minnesota. And I found out that my grandfather on my Native side was very gifted.
Interesting. And so one of the things that I'm learning myself is that sometimes this stuff is generational and there is a gift. You just have to figure out along the way who may have had that. Now, in some of our cases, especially some of us who have some abilities, did you find that over time your gifts were strengthening, or have they remained about the same since you were very young?
You know, I answered that more in a hindsight kind of way after having a daughter who was gifted as well. I noticed that she was much more gifted when she was younger, and maybe she didn't recognize what that was or would be even able to remember a lot of it, but I remember it. And then it seemed to die down a little bit, and then it seems to just like settle. And then at the time of life when a person is ready for that spiritual awakening, and that awareness to open up like a flower bud, it seems like that's when it happens again later. But my daughter, you know, she could hear me thinking when she was 3 years old, and she would respond to what I was thinking without realizing I didn't say that out loud. It was quite creepy, and I reacted in such a way that my mom did, how my mom reacted, and I realized right away I reacted badly to that. It surprised me. I didn't expect that was coming. So I think I was probably more open as a small child and closed up a lot. I still had experiences, you know, during the time where I kept pushing them away. You know, I had a client one time come in, a new client, who didn't tell me that he had any medical history that would involve anything in about our appointment. And when I touched this man's foot, I felt like my hand was on fire. Like I put my hand into a flame, and I pulled my hand back, and every time I touched him, I felt like I was putting my hand into a flame. And so I thought, well, maybe I'm moving my wrist and pinching a nerve or something funny. So I just uncovered the rest of his leg to try to move to a different location. And then that's when I realized this man was a burn victim. He had skin grafts on 3/4 of his body. And so as soon as I knew that, I could touch him without feeling the fire. But before I knew that, I was feeling the fire. It was like letting me know that.
Interesting. And would you say that this occurred, did you have your own, like, when you did this, did you do this as a medium and you were just taking appointments? Is that what was happening here when you met this man?
I was working as a massage therapist.
Oh, my God.
I was just trying to give him a massage. And I kept feeling the flames before I knew that he had been a burn victim.
Interesting.
So these things would just happen to me. I wasn't trying to make them happen. There was one particular thing that happened where I had helped these children. I always felt called to help children. And, you know, it wasn't my profession. Sometimes I would just stick my nose in where it probably didn't belong, but nobody else was doing anything about it. And so I helped this man get custody of his children and take them to Georgia from North Dakota. And the children had been in a bad situation with their mother. And, you know, I kind of said, you know, I know what's going on here. You need to give these kids to their dad and give them a better life. And, you know, I said, I know what you're doing with those kids. And she caved right away because she knew what she was doing. She'd go to jail for. And, so I helped the dad get them, and they went. He came up and took them, and off they went. And, you know, I was traveling, and I wanted to just check in on them and see how they were doing. So I arranged a visit to go and see them. My daughter and I went down there to Georgia to visit. And when we got there, this man's wife picked me up at the airport, and we went back to their home, which was way, way out in the country. And I met her son, who was 16 years old at the time. He was in a wheelchair. He had 3 of the 4 known types of cerebral palsy. And every time I looked at her son, his skin and flesh rotted off of his bones in front of my eyes. And I would just go, oh, and it just would shock me. And I'd look away because it was a horrible thing to see. And every time I looked at him, it happened. And I was trying to figure out, why am I seeing this? This has never happened to me before. This has never happened before. And so I said to his mother, is he okay? Is everything all right? And she said, yeah, he's got cerebral palsy, Jen. I'm like, I know that, but is he okay? Because I don't think he's okay. And she's like, are you okay? And he's like, yeah, I'm fine. And you know, I kept saying, I don't think he's fine. I think there's something wrong. And the more I looked at him, it kept happening, and it would start flashing this red, like an ambulance, you know, was flashing. And it was like emergency, emergency. And I just started crying because I was like, he's dying. He's dying right now. And I said, you need to take him to the hospital right now. And she's like, he's fine, Jen. He has cerebral palsy. I said, I know that. I'm not talking about that. If there is something wrong, he needs to go to the hospital. He's dying. And she just was like, you know, she was just kind of blowing me off. Here I am, a stranger to them, really. I can just imagine what she was thinking. And I grabbed a hold of her and I shook her, and I'm bawling. I'm just sobbing. And I said, take him and find out that I'm wrong, but do not stay here and find out that I'm right. You need to take him right now. I'll stay with the kids. And so she did. She just saw how serious that I was. And she put him in the car and they left. It was a 2-hour drive to get to a hospital because they lived that far out into the country. And when she got to the hospital with him, the doctor said, how did you know to bring him here? And she said, well, our friend just freaked out and demanded that I take him. Then she kept saying, he's dying, he's dying. And the doctor said, well, he had a grand mal seizure when he was sleeping. His brain has been swelling. If you had waited till there was symptoms, he would have died in your car.
Interesting. That, you know, that, and how, can I ask what age range you were in when you discovered this, when you went down there?
I was probably my mid-20s.
So you're in your mid-20s, and you are now, your abilities are probably strengthening even beyond what you could even imagine. And now you're actually visually seeing, I'm not even saying the future of somebody, but their immediate situation. And I guess I'm going to ask this. Did you find that, or do you find that when you look at people, even let's go back to your 20s when you saw this, I want to call him this kid, this gentleman. How old was this this poor boy that you saw?
He was 16, yeah.
Okay. And you weren't much older than that technically, but the thing is you saw something that obviously was brewing, you know, underneath the skin. So when you were looking at, from that point on, when you were looking at other people as well, would you actually see, like, things that you, like, you couldn't turn it off? Like, all of a sudden you could look at this person and, oh my God, something is happening with their heart. Or you look at this person and oh my God, something is happening there. Was that kind of the experiences that you were going through?
It was, but it was random. It wasn't like all the time. It was random. And it was very, you know, hindsight, looking back, it was very much to me, I think, with purpose. These people were given another chance. And so I was seeing that they needed help and to tell them that they needed to do this. And it was up to them to do it or not do it. You know, but it wasn't something I was trying to do. It was never on purpose. It would just happen. Sometimes I would see things that would protect me. Like, I had a new client. He happened to be the brother of one of the ladies who was leasing space in the same office, or it was more of a salon,
yeah.
That I was leasing space in. And he was visiting her from California, and he decided he wanted to come in and have an appointment with me. So I had an appointment with him. He looked fine. There was nothing visually wrong with him. He was polite, charismatic. You know, he never did anything or said anything to make me think he wasn't an okay guy. But as soon as I touched him, I instantly knew that this man killed women.
Oh, my God. Seriously?
Yes. And I had never had that experience before where I knew something like that when I touched. That had never happened before. So when these things start happening, you don't trust them because it's brand new to you. You're like, what the heck is going on here? You feel like you might be going crazy, right?
Yeah.
It's not something that you trust when it first starts happening. When it's your very first time, you don't necessarily trust it. But I kept having that overwhelming feeling that this man killed women and that he liked to kill women. And I was scared of him, and I just pretended like nothing was happening. I finished the session, and when he wanted to come back and see me again, I just conveniently was always not available.
Yeah.
And years later, I ran into his sister, and I said, hey, how's your brother doing? And she said, oh, he's in prison.
Oh, geez.
And I knew what for.
Yeah. 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 Surprise.
Right?
So, yeah.
I mean, that was my protecting me. I feel like I was probably in danger from him.
Would you say that this is a really deep intuition that you, because to protect yourself and to also to actually see what's happening with other individuals, you know, I'm going to refer to the word psychics or psychic mediums. Sometimes everybody has a different type of gift. So, you know, some psychic mediums cannot technically really read themselves per se, or at least this is what I've heard. Maybe you can clarify this for me. But the thing is that I think that's a very interesting two-way gift that you have here to be able to, you know, we all have this intuition inside our body. We choose to either listen to it or we choose to ignore it. And this is exactly what you're saying, but we don't all have the ability to be able to even touch somebody and to all of a sudden get essentially part of their life history, you know, downloaded into our brain or whatever. So would you say, are you able to, self-protection is one thing, understanding another person's another thing, but in your case, are you even able to self-diagnose? Like if something were to like going wrong with you?
I think you're right. It's harder to read yourself. But as an empath, because I am an empath, I do feel what other people feel, and that has definitely gotten stronger over the years. I don't necessarily have to touch somebody. I can just be standing next to them.
Yeah.
And I can feel their pain or their sadness as well. And it's become interesting that I can now differentiate between what is mine and what is someone else's. So, for instance, I was standing in a Burger King one day, and there was really a lot of people in there, and I started to feel chest pain, and I knew that it wasn't mine. It was like this easy, carefree, peaceful moment of, I have chest pain, it could be a heart attack, but it's not mine. You know, and I just knew, it's not mine. It doesn't feel different than if it was mine. It still feels the same, but inside I knew it's not mine. It's somebody else here. And I was able to look around and figure out who am I feeling here. And so that's just, you know, I think that kind of thing happens just to know what's going on around you, to help people around you if you can. It doesn't mean you have to take them under your wing and shelter them for their entire life. It's just to help guide people in that moment and let go.
Oh, Jen, I would love to have you come and be on my shelf and shelter me for the rest of my life. Seriously. I would love that. It's just like, okay, Jen, how's my life going to go today? Oh, well, then I'll just stay in bed. Or how do I, you know, one of the things, so when you recognized that this wasn't you and this was probably, was it a gentleman or a lady? Did you approach them at all? Or could you visually see that something like on their face was, they're like feeling uncomfortable about something?
I did not feel like I needed to approach that person. I felt like this was something that they went through and I was just becoming aware of it. And this was at the time where I was still just becoming more comfortable with these gifts as they were strengthening. So for me at that time, I felt like I was more in training, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Was this beyond your 20s years?
Yes.
Okay. So things are still... 30s. So still strengthening. One of the questions that I have for you, I noticed when reading about your biography, is that you have actually, and you would be the second person, by the way, that I would know who has done some work for missing persons by chance. Now, did you work for the organization, or were you approached by like police departments to help try to find missing persons?
Well, here's how that it accidentally started. The way that it happened is how it was an accident. I didn't know it was a missing person. I actually started to dream about something that had sunk into the river. And when I would dream this, I was flying through the air above. I was flying like an eagle, and I over this river, and I could see down, and then I would land, and I would be standing on this riverbank, and I would jump in to the spot where something had sank, and I was trying to swim down deep enough to drive it back up, and that's when I would wake up, and I would be like, you cannot drive something back up after it sinks. That's the most ridiculous thing. And I kept having this dream, and I kept having this dream, and I kept having this dream over and over again. And I'd always wake up thinking, that is so dumb.
Yeah.
But what I knew about dreams for me at that time is when they would have the same dream over and over and over, there was something to it.
Hmm.
And I knew exactly where that was in the river because I kept seeing it from above first. So I went on to Google Earth. And I looked up that location, and I knew exactly where it was. It was so many bends of the river towards town from where my aunt lived.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
And my aunt and her daughter and my cousin lived right next door to each other. So it was this many bends towards town in the river where this something was in the river. And so I called my cousin, and I said to her, she knew that I was gifted, and her little sister is also gifted, but she's afraid of it. And so she told me not to talk to her about it anymore, that if I wanted to know if she was sensing anything, to ask her and she'd find out for me because she was just so terrified of her senses.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called my cousin and I said, hey, I keep having this dream about something sinking in the river. Is at the bottom of the river, this many bends in the river towards town from your house. And I think there's something down there. And me, being a positive thinking person, I was like, maybe it's a treasure.
Yeah.
And I was like, is the ice still good on the river? I could maybe come out there with my husband's ice auger and throw a camera down there and see what it is. And she's like, no, the ice is breaking up. You can't do that. And I was like, oh, darn it. So I told her exactly where it was. I said, have you heard about anything sinking in the river? And she said, no, I haven't. And I said, can you ask your sister if she's felt anything about that? And she did. And she hadn't felt anything about there being something in the river. And so I just kind of let it go at that for a while. And then my cousin called me one day and she says, oh my gosh, they found her. They found her right where you said she'd be. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she said, Gina Anderson, they found her in the river right where you said she'd be.
Interesting.
And I said, I don't know who you're talking about. And here this woman had been missing for a year and a half.
Hmm.
And that without a clue, her and her car just disappeared.
Uh-huh.
And there was no sign of any wrongdoing. She was just running to the store and never made it back.
Yep.
Was in a good mood when she left. And here she had had a epileptic seizure while she was driving and drove into the river. And she was in her car at the bottom of the river right there.
Interesting.
And my cousin, who, after I told her, there is something in the river there. I keep dreaming that I need to get down there and drive it up. And I said, and I know that sounds stupid, but there's something down there. I know that there is. And she told somebody, and they looked, and sure enough, that's where she was.
Interesting. So was this the beginning of you also doing other cases as well, or was this your one and your,
nope.
As they say, your big one?
So what happened was I ended up doing an interview on a radio show, and that the interviewer put, when I told him that story, put me on the spot. And he said, you know, I know of a missing boy right now, and I know some of the people on the search team, and they're asking if I can ask you if you can find him. And I was like, okay.
Mm.
So I was like, I don't know anything about a missing boy. Tell me about him. And so they said his name, that he was a black boy, 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay. So I was trying to focus on that, and I'd never tried to do that before. But all of a sudden, I felt this cold water.
Yep.
Very icy cold water around me. And I felt like edges. And so I was telling him, I'm feeling this very cold water like the river.
Yep.
Except I'm feeling edges, like man-made edges, the width of a bathtub.
Yeah.
It's that wide. It's man-made. It's smooth. And I said, and he's wrapped up. And I explained that he was wrapped up. And I said, he's wrapped up tight in a blanket, really tight, and then duct taped like a mummy.
Oh,
but
geez.
His hands are tied and his feet are tied together first. And I described all this stuff, but he's in this, it's a man-made structure, the width of a bathtub, but it's cold like the river. It's like river water. And then I like started to feel this overwhelming emotion, and I had to stop. I'm like, I need to stop. Because if I lose control when I'm feeling something like that, I lose all control and I just can't stop crying. So I'm like, I need to stop. On to the next thing. And he said, so you have a good, I said, I don't have a good feeling. I don't think he's still living, you know. But the people that were listening from the search team knew exactly what I was talking about when I said cold river water and how wide it was. They knew I was describing the drains, the drains that are man-made drains that are connecting to the river. And they started looking there and they found him right away.
Mm.
And he was wrapped up just like I said he was.
How long had he been missing for again?
I'm not sure how long he was missing. I never really asked, I guess, but they were still actively searching for him. It was fairly new. And then he asked me if I would, this was not on the air, this was just personally, then he asked me if I would look again and see who did it.
Oh.
And that was very hard for me because I had to connect with him and go through that with him. So I felt those emotions that the child felt during what was happening. And I said, he knows this man, he loves this man, he doesn't know what he did wrong, he's trying to figure out what he did wrong. And he knows this man. He loves this man, you know, and it was his stepdad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What did he do wrong?
Yeah.
A lot of times, nothing. They're just there.
Yeah. And apparently the stepdad had taken out a life insurance policy.
Of course. You know, I didn't think that they could do that. I had looked with my law background. There was a point where I thought that people could not take out life insurance policies on their kids. Am I wrong on that?
I think you can, but, you know, I had, when I was younger, and, you know, I had life insurance on both myself and my child to cover expenses, but it wasn't more than $10,000.
Right.
You know, I don't know what the legal parameters are, but I know you can have enough to cover expenses.
Yeah, because the thing that I recall, and I might, for those of you who are listening, I may be completely wrong on this because I'm just kind of going back in time. A lot of times they say, I may be wrong, so don't quote me, that you can only have as much on a individual as their quote-unquote worth. Well, how do you define worth for a child who hasn't necessarily finished high school, finished college? For some, you know, they define a worth that way and say, well, you've lost out because of da-da-da-da-da. But I would assume that in this particular case, as sad as this is, that even if the child had $10,000 or less on their life, that this person who, the stepdad who killed this child and thought he was going to get away with it, didn't care. It was to this person enough money to do whatever this person wanted to do with this money. So, you know, how sad. Did you say this person was put in jail eventually?
As far as I know, yeah, it was a done deal.
I think that it's remarkable to be able to have such gifts and abilities. My question to you is, do you see, some people hear things, some people see things, some people sense things. What goes on in Jen's mind when you are having an experience or a psychic experience with somebody? Do you see all of this, or is it something that's specific that goes on with you?
In that particular case, when I went through it with him, it was more I was feeling his emotions and his sensing his thoughts during it, trying to figure out what he did wrong. I'm sorry, you don't understand. You know, it was, and I was crying with him. And it's a very, I gotta say, it's very unpleasant. I don't enjoy doing it at all. And in cases where I've been asked to help, I was asked to help with a family of a woman that went missing from my reservation. They was asked to help in that case. And the person who asked me to do it knew the grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of pushed me to do it. And I looked at it and I said, right off the bat, I said, she's dead.
Mm. Mm.
And that guy killed her.
Yeah.
And that family is not ready to hear that. And I don't want to tell them.
Yeah.
Because they're not ready to hear that. And it is really hard to tell somebody that when they are. I mean, are you really, really ever ready? But there are times when a person is more ready.
Yeah.
I mean, they still had too much hope. And I said, I don't want to tell them that. And so the person that I told this to was, I said, I'm not going to tell them that. You can tell them that if you want to, but I'm not going to. They're not ready. And I said, that's the guy. He killed her. And he's just trying to mislead the police. And then after we said, you know, that we don't have a good feeling. We didn't come right out and say that, but that's what I said. We don't have a good feeling about this. That, you know, and they kept wanting me to come up there. And I kept saying, look, and I finally just said, look, she's not living anymore. That man is responsible for it. This isn't true. And 2 days after that, the mother gets a text message from this girl's phone. And the company says it turns on in Minneapolis. Her phone turns on in Minneapolis. Hmm. She sends a text message to her mom saying, she's just feeling overwhelmed. Stop looking for me. I just need some time. And the phone shuts off again.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're all of a sudden thinking she's in Minneapolis, and the person calls me and says, she's alive, she's in Minneapolis. I said, no, she's dead, she's not in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. That's not her.
Yeah.
That's him trying to throw you off.
Right.
And And they, oh, no, no, he's not there. He's up north. And I said, no, no, he's got friends helping him. That is not her. She is dead. And this is them trying to throw you off. And I said, he has friends helping him. And, you know, they started looking for her in Minneapolis. And I'm like, and they kept asking me to help look for her in Minneapolis. I said, she's dead. She's not there. Stop asking me. This is not fun for me. And I said, stop asking me this. You know, I was just getting really annoyed by it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, don't ask me if you're not going to listen to what I say. Don't even ask me that. And so it comes out later. And I just kept saying it. I kept saying it. I kept saying it. And then I said, she got killed in the basement. Because I actually was doing, I was helping another family on the reservation. And I drove up there because I was working with one of the psychic kids, basically, whose family has forgotten about those gifts. Mm-hmm. And they were having trouble with this girl having ghosts in the house. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other children were starting to see them. And she felt responsible for them. She called them her whisper friends. And they want the parents were getting afraid, basically, of what was going on here. And she wasn't sleeping because they were bugging her so much. And, you know, she felt this little girl felt such responsibility. Like, she knew she was supposed to help them. She just didn't know how. And so I went up there to help them, and I brought a spirit box along because I thought if the family could hear them saying, please help me, they won't be afraid of them anymore. Yeah. Okay. So I brought the spirit box. I started a spirit box session in the room, and we had some spirits reacting. And all of a sudden, I hear a woman scream, I'm in the basement. There was no basement on this house. I knew exactly who it was. I recognized immediately who that was. It was that woman who had gone missing.
Interesting.
And I had a vision of her lying at the bottom of the stairs in the basement. And I knew she died in the basement.
Interesting.
And so later, the mom of this other little girl who I was helping, she said, "What was that about?" And I said, "That has nothing to do with here. That's this other case that I'm connected to. She was just telling me that's where she died." And so I told the people who originally helped that she died in the basement. And at the bottom, she was died in the basement. She fell down the stairs and, you know, after what he did to her, and she died. And it later came out when the police pressured him so hard, he finally confessed that he did kill her. Hmm. That he beat the crap out of her. Mm-hmm. And she fell down the – and he basically threw her down the stairs. Uh-huh. And she died. She died in the basement. And then him and his friends freaked out because they didn't know what to do. So they disposed of her body. Yep. And the one friend took her cell phone to Minneapolis.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, have they reached out to you on occasion for assistance on anything?
They haven't, but I am connected to some other psychics who do that work with them, who have asked me to help assist on certain cases.
Yep.
And I really do not enjoy that work at all.
Yeah.
I do not. I mean, if there was a chance that the person was still alive, I would feel much better about it.
Yeah.
But I do not. I mean, it really saddens me to despair. I really don't enjoy doing it.
Well, and I was gonna ask you about that anyway, because I knew many years ago, I knew this woman who was an incredible psychic, just like you, and she worked for missing children, and she had to remove herself from certain cases at times because the things that she would see or feel or encounter. And she worked on, by the way, the famous Jacob Weatherling case from back in the day, but she had to remove herself from that case because she said she was just so overwhelmed. And that's what I'm thinking with you. Does this drain your energy to a level that makes you feel a little bit ill, Jen?
It does. It really does. And when I was younger and healthier, I really didn't feel it as much as more of an emotional drain, and just I would feel trauma.
Right.
I would feel trauma of going through someone's murder with them, you know, sensing that with them. It was traumatizing to me. But as I got older, and I have a heart condition now, that I could feel it more draining me. It's more draining on my own life energy, and I just don't feel like it's a healthy thing for me to do anymore. And you know, I had this friend, years ago when I was just going through my spiritual awakening. And I had my native elder who was guiding me through that, which I don't think I would have made it through without his guidance. But he told me not to communicate with other people and tell them these things yet, to just stay separate and just talk to him about it. He says most people wouldn't understand, and you're not ready to interact with other people like this, that are like this, and they're not ready for you and you're not ready for them. So he told me to stay away from them. So I avoided holistic fairs. I avoided anything to do with psychic gatherings. You know, I just stayed by myself, and I named things. I would experience things and I would name things what I thought they should be named and not know if they had a different name out there. And so when I met his ex-wife, who was a pretty prominent psychic, and she ran with some pretty really big time psychic people in groups, and they would travel and do things together, I had access to her, and her and I would email each other back and forth, and we just developed this wonderful friendship. And so I started telling her about my experiences and what I called it, what I named this or what I named that, and what I thought this was that was happening. And I said, can you tell me if that sounds right, or if it has a different name, will you tell me what it is called so I can adjust my vocabulary? And she would tell me, you know, oh, you're calling this the whole soul, where Seth called it the oversoul. And, you know, she kept asking me, are you channeling Seth? And I'm like, who is Seth? And Seth was the being that Jane Roberts had channeled in the Seth material, and Seth Speaks, those very famous books, and she was channeling this being known as Seth, and he was giving just very detailed, often scientific information that was just so incredible. And when Jane would, this person that I was friends with was actually good friends with Jane Roberts, and she said Jane never remembered anything that she channeled. You know, they videoed her, and she would even have meetings, and she would never remember any of it. She would just, it would take her over, and Seth would take her over and would talk. She never remembered anything.
Let me ask you a little bit about this Seth for a moment here. Are we talking, and people are probably asking the same question in their minds, are we talking some type of an alien encounter or experience here? Who is Seth?
Well, I never read the Seth material. I'm not a book reader. Everything I know, I've experienced. But from what I understood, Seth was claiming to be that was his one of many names. He had been reincarnated here many times. And they asked him, you know, if we would know who he was. And he said, yes, you would know who I am, but that would take away from the teaching here. And so just call me Seth.
Interesting. So I'm going to twist this up a little bit here. I want to ask a little bit, because you've mentioned it, and you also, we had a discussion about this just before the show began. I would like you to explain to people, because I, about this remote viewing. I had, it's not a secret to anyone that I've been to Las Vegas, and I've been part of conferences and all this stuff there, and remote viewing was something that I was being taught or developed further while I was there, and with great accuracy, only in that moment under what I felt were interesting circumstances or a frequency that allowed me to be able to get things right, but it's not like I can do it all the time. I would like you to tell people a little bit about what remote viewing is, and then share with us, if you would, some of your experiences.
Okay, so I don't have any formal training in controlled remote viewing. I know what that is because the psychic that I told you about that I had made friends with, she had lots of formal training from the Monroe Institute on controlled remote viewing, and she was actually part of some of their first experiments on that. And she told me she was very scared because she knew the government was involved in it, and she was scared to answer correctly all the time because she was afraid of what they would do to her if they knew that she could read their files.
Yep. Nope. I understand that 100%. Yep.
So she explained to me what controlled remote viewing was and how that's done. She didn't teach me how to do it, but she was describing it to me because she said, what you are doing is a form of remote viewing. It's different, but she said it is remote viewing. So she was telling me what it was called, what I was doing. So what I do, and I've always been attracted to, obsessed with more so, maps and satellite imagery. I love looking down at something and from the air, looking at locations from the air. And so when Google Earth came out, I was obsessed. Before that, I had an obsession with atlases and maps. If somebody told me about a place, I'd have to go stare at it on the map. And I didn't really know why, but it was like I was receiving insight into that place by looking at it on a map. And when Google Earth came, it was so much more incredible for me. And so I would just spend hours and hours looking at places on Google Earth. And it was like I was gaining information about those places by just looking at them from above. And so when I had found a place that had been lost by my tribe, they didn't know it was there. And it was like a labyrinth of trees and a mounded ground in the shape of a turtle. And I found it from above by doing this. And it was like I was just drawn there. And then my mom and I went there in person and found it in person. It's incredible. It's absolutely massive. And my tribe didn't even know it was there. They had forgotten all about it. The trees are over 100 years old. So that was pretty cool. You know, things that I was guided to find, I felt. But then when I started with the I was in touch with somebody who had a paranormal investigations team. And, you know, he said, I wonder if you could try to remote view this location for me. And I'm like, oh, that's an interesting idea. I would sure like to try. So I had never tried to do that on purpose, like to gain information about a place specifically that was being haunted like that. So I got the GPS coordinates and I started to look at the place on Google Earth and I just started asking questions. And what I would see in the image of the satellite image would change in reaction to whatever question I asked. And so it's not necessarily that anybody else would see that on the picture, but that's how I was gaining information. It would look, I would see like a little vision on top of it. And so I would see sometimes people digging, I would see mass graves, I would see, you know, ghosts, I would see, you know, what was happening. And so this one particular case, and it was the first time I tried, I was seeing all these different things in this home, and I saw a dead body. A human dead body was in the house. And I said, there's a dead body in the house. Is it a cremation? Somebody's ashes? No. Okay. Is it somebody got buried there a long time ago and they don't know it's there? Nope. They know it's there. Did they kill this person? Nope. They did not kill this person. I'm like, but it must be a cremation, then the ashes. No, it's not the ashes. I'm like, so there's a human dead body in this house that they did not kill this person, and they know it's there and it's not buried. How is that even true? That can't be true. I kept saying, that cannot be true. And I just kept getting that answer, that it is true. It is true. And so against my better judgment, I told them, this is what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a human dead body in this house that is not, they did not kill. They know it's there. It's not a cremation. I don't know how that could be true, but there you have it. I keep getting it. And I also saw this, you know, when I first started, I saw this bear, a spirit bear looking at itself, and it felt sad that it was there. And then these Indians were staring at the bear. These three Indians were always staring at the bear. And I described the Indians. I said, one of them has the Indian feathers, like a chief on his head, and the next one next to it has a wolf pelt on his head, and the one next to him has a bison fur on his head. And all three of them are staring at this bear all the time. And then I saw this hunter running at me, yelling about something he should not have done. And you know, all this, and then the human body was there. And I was just like, okay, this is all very strange. And I don't know what it means, but here's what I saw. And I just gave it to them. I typed it out and gave it to them. And the person said, wow, Jen, I don't think that could be true. And I'm like, I don't know, that maybe I'm not good at this. I don't know, but that's what I saw. And so they went to this home and he calls me and he says, Jen, you're not going to believe this. I'm like, what? He says, okay, I walk in. The first thing I see is this giant stuffed bear.
Okay. That's number one.
He said, and then right across on the wall are these three Indian masks on the wall, one with the feathers, and then the wolf pelt, and the bison with the horns, bison fur with the horns, and they are positioned so that they're staring at the bear.
Interesting.
I'm like, okay, cool. And he said, then I went into the basement, and that basement is filled with dead animals. Oh, I did forget to tell you that I also saw these spirits running through the house that I'd never seen before. I didn't know what they were. They were not human.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, what is that? What is that? And I finally got that they were tree spirits.
Yeah.
And they were pissed. They were so angry at these people. They were so angry with them. And I'm like, okay. So that was part of what I had seen. And so he says he went into the basement. And he said, it's filled with dead animals. He said, this guy is an amateur taxidermist, and he keeps killing animals to practice. And he's awful. It was awful. And I was like, okay, so that was the hunter saying what he should never have done.
Yeah, that's right.
And then he said, and get this, they have a human dead body in their house.
Oh.
I'm like, what? How? What? What? He said, they purchased a mummy from a museum that went out of business.
Oh.
I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. That's crazy. And, so then he said, okay, and get this. They've lived here a long time. They've never had any paranormal issues until one day the tree in the front yard fell over and all hell broke loose in the house.
Really? Interesting. Did he ever say what kind of things were happening in the house?
Now, this was years ago. I don't even recall what was happening to these people, but just that they were being terrorized by some type of haunting and that they were desperately seeking help.
I think I would be creeped out in and of itself just having a taxidermy situation down in the basement and with a bunch of, I mean, you can't tell me it didn't smell down there. I mean, I can't even imagine being an investigator to that, you know, to that degree, going into somebody's house and not smelling anything unless that is, I mean, I don't know anything about taxidermy, so maybe there's just a way that they can rid that before it becomes a problem, but with the tree falling over on the house and everything, and then all of a sudden things just started going a little twerpy-twoppy. Any thoughts as to why you think that might have occurred?
I think the tree spirits ventured into the house when they were sensing something was wrong. And, you know, tree spirits are nature spirits.
Yeah.
They don't like things out of balance. They would be absolutely against somebody killing animals just for the purpose of stuffing them. That would be not okay. So I had never seen a tree spirit before that.
Well, I'm going to ask a little bit about tree spirits now that you're talking about it. So why don't you explain to people a little bit about what makes up or what makes a tree spirit and give us kind of a visual so we can walk into this situation with you.
You know, what they looked like to me, they were kind of small, but they had like hair, but their hair was more like branchy. And at first I thought they looked like scary witches screaming, but with their hair just being so wild like that. But I'm like, I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. And I kept asking, what is that? And then I just got tree spirit, that they were part of the tree. And, you know, I technically don't guess I know much about them other than that there are nature spirits that are connected to different forms of life. And they are absolutely for the balance of nature. And they would not be okay with somebody just going and killing animals for the purpose of stuffing them.
So do these tree spirits, are they on everybody's property? Because if you say the answer is yes, you're going to see a lot of people cutting their trees down this week, okay?
I understand. I don't know, to be honest with you. I really don't know if they're everywhere. I don't know. I know that trees themselves are sentient beings. So I don't know, and to be honest with you, I don't know if they're something separate from the tree or if they, from what I think that they are, the tree spirit itself could be something what people would think of as a fairy, some type of a fairy, but I don't know if it's something separate than the spirit or the soul of a tree, which they are sentient beings. They really are.
Well, when you say sentient, are you saying that we're now all supposed to go out and start singing to our trees as well as our plants?
Well, I do that, actually.
Oh. Any particular song here that you have in mind that would be a good one here? Do they like rock and roll or classical music or anything like that? I mean, there are a lot of people that actually do sing to their plants because it makes them happier and healthier. And I'm sure there's going to be an increase in that coming on after this show is over with. But trees, I mean, yeah, I guess you could say that I've talked to a tree once in a while. And, you know, especially when they get really, 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 really old. You know, I still talk to trees once in a while. You know, you heard of tree hugging. Well, people do that with the love in their heart when they hug a tree. But I don't know. I just find that very, very fascinating. And what will be even more interesting will be part two with Jen Cruz as we discuss ghost children, Bigfoot, and of course the connection between Bigfoot and UFO encounters. Thank you for listening this evening, and head on over to part two. This is Dr. Kelly Schutz with Paranormal Encounters Podcast Series. Good night.